tacky, but we class act it.
We're live. We are live.
Hey, Noah. Hope you have a good Friday. I think you have tomorrow off, so we're going to have you this show polished up, beautiful, ready to rock and roll in about 35, 40 minutes. Or an hour. All right, this show is the advisor show, continued.
And financial detox for financial advisors, part two.
Becoming the best advisor you can be. Mm-hmm. Our financial detox for advisors, whatever. What was the title of the last one?
Financial detox for financial advisors.
It was.
Mm-hmm.
So this one will be something like that.
Okay. Timer on.
Here's some information.
Oh, wow.
Heat some information. I've got the deepest Australian accent you've ever heard. Welcome to Financial Detox. Hi, I'm Jason Labrum, your host in studio with Alex Klingensmith, and we are bringing you the second series of a show for financial advisors. We are financially detoxifying financial advisors. What a nice little twist we got going on here. A COVID twist, huh, Alex?
Yeah, well, we had to start thinking of some fresh content because everyone's talking about the same thing every day, all day.
Yeah, and we're not going to do it.
No, we're not going to do it. And our normal audience is to investors, so we thought we'd spin on off that even for a moment and talk to other financial advisors.
Right, and when you say investors, you mean individual humans like you and me and other people who have money invested in their 401k and who have money invested maybe in the market, who have an E-Trade account or a Schwab account or a Merrill Lynch advisor or a UBS advisor or a IDA advisor, intelligence-driven advisors, right? Like that. That's what
right. I mean, the purpose means of our show is to educate, empower, and eliminate toxic financial advice.
That is it.
That's our purpose as a firm, as a RIA, an independent, all-the-time, full-time fiduciary firm. That's what we do as
educate,
yeah,
empower, and eliminate toxic financial advice because we believe, and it's become overwhelmingly evident, that in our industry, in our business, there is a lot of toxic advice that gets given to clients and given mm-hmm. to individuals, and it's not good. And it's given with conflicts of interest, and I think the bigger problem is here, Alex. And it takes time as an advisor. And this is this is going to be. I think this is going to transition well. advisors are not always the answer, right? Because so many advisors are actually doing things that are financially toxic for themselves. Mm-hmm. They're following a financially toxic thought process. And by toxic, we mean flawed and we mean broken and whatnot. But I think that I can speak from personal experience that as you become a financial advisor, none of us are born with financial wisdom, right? You learn that over time. And a lot of young people get into the financial advisory business, and they get into it with hopes of making good money and having a good life and doing all these things. And mm-hmm. and then they go to work for big firms maybe, and those big firms have about 50 different or 100 different investment philosophies. They actually don't. You mentioned today when we were talking about this, they don't. The firms that you know of, every brand name firm you know of, they don't have an investment philosophy. What they have is a bunch of products that then their advisors sell. And I think as an advisor, you don't realize that. Well,
I think
on.
It's okay too. Like we don't have to, right. You don't have to look at that and say, I don't like BlackRock or, you know, JP Morgan because they don't have an investment philosophy. Just like, I don't like Ralph's because they have every kind of food. Ralph sells a bunch of food. You don't, you know, they sell really healthy food. They also sell junk food. Like it's not their job to tell us what to buy and what to eat. Right. They're just trying to sell everything they can because that's how they make money as a business, right?
They're trying to serve people, and people have a broad range of desires and needs and wants.
Yeah.
And so they try and serve those people. So that's maybe the best analogy I've ever heard in regards to this. Nice one, Alex.
The most exciting thing you can do lately is go to the store. So yeah. I mean, I don't have a lot left right now.
Into that.
I got the store and the ocean. That's it.
well, and you kind of have the ocean. It depends on where you can access the ocean, right?
I mean, hey, the water's really, open. Just get out there.
Just find your path. Find the free path. Run past the cops. what a great analogy, though. You know, I mean, so when you think about the big firms, and I think this is a financially toxic thought process that individuals have and business owners and businesses is that, oh, if I'm going to go to Merrill Lynch, and I'm not picking on Merrill Lynch, it's a great firm. I spent 6 years of my life there and I learned a lot. But I'm going to go to this firm because they have a great investment philosophy, or they're going to help me with my investments. That's not what's happening. All right. They have a bunch of salespeople, a bunch of coded as financial advisors, and those financial advisors have a plethora of options to choose, all of which the firm has vetted and allowed on their platform. So the firm has said, we're going to allow our distribution force, our sales team, to sell this. Most of the time, that's because they're getting some revenue from that product, unfortunately, which a lot of times the advisor doesn't even realize how much revenue the firm is getting. But now the advisor can do one of 100 things. So our show today is to help advisors identify what your investment philosophy is. We always talk to clients, Alex, about one of the most important things as an individual who has money invested is to have an investment philosophy. And if you pay somebody for advice, it's that person that should be bringing that investment philosophy, discipline, structure, process to you. But I don't think most advisors have one investment philosophy. And that's the key word, is one, right? You have to have an investment philosophy. You have to have one investment philosophy.
And we, you know, backing up a little bit too, like every advisor listening out there and every client of an advisor, or, you know, you have to have a plan, right? So a business plan. We talked about our business plan.
We're going
to
dive into that later
within
in the show.
Within the business plan, those key components of building a business plan, I think, help you arrive at investment philosophy and come back and retest it. Last show, we talked about our origin stories, like what helped us build our foundation of principles, of values, of how to do business, what to do, what not to do.
Yep.
Through experience, trial and error.
Yes, definitely trial and error.
So I think that's what we want to share on the show today, is how to build a business plan for an advisor, how to determine what investment philosophy is true to your core, you know, that you can stand, that stands up the test of COVID and other things like this, right?
I think we can truly bring value to advisors right now. And I think that individuals who are listening and business owners will also get value out of hearing us talk to advisors and with advisors on this, because there is a lot to it. You said trial and error, and trial and error rings true to me, because I remember a time when I was in this business. It's been 23 years now, but I remember a time where I felt there was some profound ability within myself and my team that I could outsmart the markets. And if you think about what I'm saying when I say I could outsmart the markets, that means that we thought for a brief moment in time that we as a team were smarter than the collective knowledge of tens of millions of other market participants all combined. And by that, I know it's a complex thought process, but by that I mean, you know, people are buying and selling stocks based upon their beliefs and what they think is going to happen. And there's tens and tens and millions, if not hundreds of millions, of people doing that every day. So that price is moving based upon people buying and selling, and that's based upon all the information they've gathered and they know and they think is going to happen in the future about that stock. So if I go buy an individual stock, I'm professing that I know something that they don't know. I know something that's not already priced into it. I know, I have a feeling about what's going to happen in the future that is different than tens of millions of other people's feelings, who most of them are doing, some of them, a small portion of them are doing an enormous amount more research than we are, right? I mean, like, you're talking about an analyst who truly follows that company and sits on every single conference call, knows all the... Every bit of the management team, knows the management team's history and their pedigrees, and knows their competitions and their competitions' management teams and pedigrees and their product lines and their future product lines. Could you imagine knowing all that about more than, you know, 10 stocks? It would be a full-time job. So there was a time where we felt we could do that, and we learned through a very humbling process and just reality. We were honest with ourselves. So I think that's where I want to pick up when we come back. It's talking about that business plan you said, and as an advisor, how do you decide who you are as an advisor? How are you going to provide real value to people and do it in a way that's not toxic? Because if you think you're going to pick stocks and you're going to provide value above and beyond what the markets could do, we think there's pretty much a lot of evidence that will tell you that won't work. So we'll keep digging in here. Stay with us. We'll be right back. It's Financial Detox. It's a hard concept to get out. It's too huge, you know? And then you say about picking stocks and that, and then you look at, you know, Dave Benton, who's picked a bunch of stocks and just slayed it, right? Because he's picked the right stocks at the right time, but he slayed it. And then you think about buying, you know, 30 or 40 great, great companies, diversified, a couple international, but mostly U.S. companies that have all, you know,
Well, Dave Benton got lucky.
Yeah.
Could he do that? Could he manage a, you know, could he do that with other people's money repeatedly, sustainably over time?
Highly unlikely, but you never know. Maybe.
I mean, how?
Tech's the new thing. He knows tech. He's in tech. He bought tech. He won.
So far.
Okay. Welcome back. It's Financial Detox. I'm Jason Labor. I'm with Alex Klingensmith, and we are helping not only individuals, we are helping not only you become financially detoxed, but we're reaching out to the financial advisors today as a second part of a series of shows, talking to financial advisors about what they can do to make a difference in their business, help you do more business, help you do better business for your clients, change people's lives. And when you serve other people from a good place, it comes back to you in fold. So Alex, you were talking about the business plan. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, I think as a responsible adult who has, you know, a duty to do.
You're claiming you're responsible?
No, I'm speaking figuratively right now. If you happen to be one of these people. No, running a business, right? So being an advisor, whether you work at an independent brokerage firm, meaning you're an one person that plugs into like an LPL or some large thing like that.
Independent broker dealer, regional broker dealer.
Or you work at one of these giant, like those are our biggest audiences listening right now. Either you're one of those advisors that work at a giant wirehouse individually or on a team, or you are plugged into one of these independent brokerage firms, or you're a client of one of these advisors. That's the biggest audience we're talking to right now. Right. That's where most advisors, you know, that's where most of them work.
Right.
So you still need to have a business plan, even if it's just you, but especially if you have a team, because then you can organize your thoughts collectively together, right? Into one master business plan. But so it starts with a purpose.
We recently revisited ours, dialed it in with a strategic business planning coach.
Yeah.
To help us refine it and try and continue to make it better. And I think we learned a lot from that process, don't you?
We did, I think, because
now it's implementation. Sorry.
For sure. We've done this every year and definitely every 3 to 5 years, but it's really good to have a moderator who's a third party, because if we do it ourselves, we kind of skim over things that we're like, we got that part dialed. Yeah. Actually, we didn't. It was good to uncover things and really spend time on it. But and also because of what's going on right now, I think initially it was a terrible time to distract from focusing on clients and client communication. But in fact, it actually reinstilled, I think, more confidence in what we do, because we had to go back and look at like, why do we exist? What's our purpose?
Right.
What are we supposed to be doing for clients?
Yep.
What are the values that help drive those decisions? That's the values, right?
Yep.
What's our vision? Like, what are we going to come out of this looking like?
What are we going to be when we grow up?
That's right. Those are the first three parts. And it was a really, I think, awesome experience, because it gave me at least, and I think it gave the other leaders of our firm, and then as we communicated out to the rest of the team, much more confidence and clarity, and like, we're optimistic about the future. Having a plan means there will be a future.
Right. Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
In our opinion.
It was interesting. I listened to I was on a webinar this morning with a high ranking leader in the armed forces overseas, and talking about leadership and training and stuff. And one of the things that he talked about in their culture overseas, and talking about like, you know, Afghanistan and all the provinces and areas around there, that these people, you can't understand how they think. And like, we can't go over there and force our ways and our thought processes on them, because they don't believe in tomorrow. They don't believe there's a future. So he's
you mean
a
like
one
terrorists,
of the things.
You mean?
No, even the people, like they are living day to day. They believe that God has their path today, and it's let tomorrow solve for tomorrow, which there's some great biblical reference there. But at the same time, like, one of the measurements that they're using to determine success is that people will actually save money, that they'll actually have a savings account, a place to save money. Because if you save money, conceivably you believe in tomorrow and you're optimistic, because other than that, you wouldn't save any money. You'd spend it all today. So it's kind of interesting, that tie that you had. But you talked about purpose, values, and vision. And so as a business, as we're not trying to be business coaches here to financial advisors, although I think between the two of us, our 35 or so years, 36 years, 37 years of experience, could really help, especially younger advisors and even seasoned advisors who get in their rut of doing things the old way, and it's not necessarily the right way. But creating, whether you're an independent broker dealer, whether you're an individual at a big firm, having a purpose. Like, so for us, it's to educate, empower, and eliminate toxic financial advice. We want to educate our clients. We want to empower them so that they can live their best financial life, so they can live with financial peace of mind. And we want to truly eliminate toxic financial advice. That's why sometimes we're kind of harsh against our competitors and against what we think is wrong and toxic advice. We'll fight. We'll step up, right? I mean,
I think we also call out firms and leaders and industry thought leaders that we admire too,
all the time, right? Because there's some great people that we learn from every day. Values, you know, what are the values, right? So we have integrity, optimism, work ethic, personal improvement, and collaboration. Those are values that if somebody doesn't represent, they really don't belong at our firm and can't be part of it, right? If you don't have integrity and you're not going to do what's in the client's best interest, and you're not going to do what's in the firm's best interest and in other people's best interest, if you're not honest, it's just not going to work. And I could go through them all, but that would be boring. And then we create a vision and, of course, what we want to be in 5 years. We want to continue to grow. We want to be, you know, a household name in our regions. We want to serve lots of people. That's not selfish. We want to get big so we make more money. In the end, we will make more money and it'll be great. That's awesome. Everybody wants to make more money. But we know that if we can serve more people and help them have the financial experience that our clients have, they'll be more successful. So, but for advisors, I think as you line this out and you come up with strategic priorities, like what is really important for you to accomplish? And I keep going back to it. What is the investment? How are you going to advise clients, right? What are you going to tell clients to do? And do you believe in picking individual stocks? Do you believe in ETFs because of their tax efficiency and lower cost? Do you believe in a passive or active going back up higher, 60,000 foot view? Mm-hmm. What do you believe in and how do you articulate that and then find evidence and proof that's honest and true with integrity and get that story and then stick to that story and build it and go help people. But if you stay to one investment philosophy and you don't allow the winds of change and things to, you know, the different economic environments and different news and headlines and events, if you don't allow those to sway you, you'll be really successful for your clients, I think, by staying to one. Even if it's an active philosophy, which we don't necessarily believe in stock picking or active money management, I think that you can do really well for people. So that's one thing. I think that the other thing that we talk about a lot at our firm is you have to grow. If you're not growing, you are shrinking, right? If you're not bringing new, because you have natural attrition, clients die, things happen. Sometimes people move and, you know, you lose a client here or there. Fortunately, we don't lose many and that's great, but.
Well, also other people are growing. If you're not growing and you let the forces of the markets, you know, consumer demand, catch up to you in terms of, when I say catch up to you, I mean, we talked about this before the show, industries are evolving faster right now than ever before because they're forced to evolve. So our industry, the financial services industry, for example, has already been evolving at a natural pace
slow, though,
here and there. Well, cause there's a lot of money that's working against the evolution. They're like, well, there's traditional old tried and true ways. The behemoth companies control most of the money.
Yep.
So their motivation is to allow evolution as long as it still serves their shareholders, right? Yeah. And their, you know, their leaders. But right now everyone's just, it's like everything's fair game. So if you're not growing, if you're not really looking at eyes wide open all the different ways to truly serve your purpose and your business plan, which better be to help clients, number one, and help each other, of course, but you're going to be left behind really fast right now.
You are. And we're going to talk to you a little bit for you advisors, how to grow, how we think a couple key ways that we think you can grow your business and continue to evolve and get better. So stay with us. We'll be right back. It's Financial Detox. I'm Jason Labrum. You can give us a call at 877-707-8889 or check us out at financialdetox.com.
And here's where we can hammer the investment philosophies that just get dismantled right now. Not to pick on anybody. I mean, if you have 100 clients and you're an advisor, even if you're on a team and you have 100 clients who have larger net worths, or you're an individual advisor who's got 100 clients that have, you know, $1 million net worth, I don't know, speaking to advisors, and every single time you have a conversation, it's different because they're all invested differently because you've been an order taker or you've sold them different things because you've changed every single week of the past 10 years or whatever. I mean, I can't imagine what that's like right now.
Yeah, it's impossible to do well.
Well, it's got to be
reactionary. You're not proactive. You can't be on top of your game. So let's nail that. We only have 7 minutes here.
That's okay.
So we'll nail it. Welcome back. It's Financial Detox. I'm Jason Laban with Alex Klingensmith. At break, Alex, you talked about something really important. We want to try and drive something home here. We tend to start talking and we want to really drive something home, but and give you some takeaways. So as advisors, we were talking about growing. And one of the things that I think is a way to grow, and I'll be brief on this because I want to get to your point. You know, I always call it the three legs to a new business development stool. You have to have at least three things going on that you're doing that are SMART goals. They're specific, they're measurable, they're achievable, they're realistic, and they're time-bound, SMART. And you have to have those detailed. So maybe I'm doing seminars. Maybe I am cold calling, right? Or maybe I am belonging to an organization and I'm the leader of that organization. Very specific things where you talk about how many days a week, how many times a day, you know, you detail that out. I think if you have three legs to a new business development stool, you can be successful as an advisor in growing your business. And number one, though, you really have to serve people. And how do you serve people in an efficient, scalable way? Because when you think about it, to manage hundreds of clients or 80 or 50 clients, we manage money in what we call a discretionary manner, meaning our clients give us discretion to make the trades in their accounts. It's amazing to me, mind-boggling, how many advisors are still not managing money on a discretionary basis. So what this means is we get to know our clients. We understand them, their goals and objectives. We build a comprehensive financial plan for them. We know everything about them. And once we know that, we know how we should invest their money because we're tying their investment strategy to their financial plan and it's detailed. This is how you should do it as an advisor. If you don't start figuring out how to do that, if you can't figure out how to do that in your current environment, then call us and we'll talk to you because we always have room for great advisors. But if you aren't building a plan, if you're not tying it to the client's portfolio, and then the client should let you manage the money then, right? Conceivably, they're hiring you, they're paying you money to help them. Shouldn't you do the trades and manage it? Because if you are an advisor, why don't you say what you said? Because it was a great point. It's like the conundrum that exists for so many advisors today.
It is.
And it's a conundrum for the clients. If they only knew how disorganize the advisors where they would leave.
I think what happens with a lot of advisors, like I was on this path right before I met you, you know, you're given all this menu of options, right? And yep. and you're good. You can connect, you can build rapport, you can get trust and confidence from clients. And then you find yourself a year, 10 years later, whether it's you as an individual advisor or you're on a team, let's say you've got 100 clients. Awesome. If you're on a team, the 100 clients are probably higher net worth people, $5, $10, $20 million net worth maybe. If you're an individual by yourself, maybe they're lower net worth. Either way, if you've been kind of figuring it out onesie, twosie along the way, like, okay, this client has all stocks. This client has, you know, all ETFs. This client has got some annuities and some stocks. Then think back on this past 2 months of chaos, right? Market drop, historic. What has that been like for you to have to talk to each client, all 100 of them, probably in the past 2 months, I would hope, if you're a good communicator, like you should be, you're changing your story every single time. That's not the way investing should be done. Well, the financial plan's okay to be customized, 100 different financial plans, totally custom.
Yeah.
But the way that that people are being invested and their investment experience should by and large have some consistency about it. Otherwise, you are reshaping your vision, your purpose, your values every conversation.
Yeah, it's impossible. And I lived in that world when I first started in the business where there wasn't discretion on accounts. And I literally said to my dad, who was in the business up in Temecula, I said, I'm out. This is the dumbest business I've ever seen. I have all these clients and they're either totally conservative or they're totally aggressive or they're somewhere in between. And I'm not saying that clients should be put in a bucket and a model because there's customization within all of our portfolios.
Sure.
But clients are either conservative or they're aggressive or they're somewhere in between. And I'm like, but every client that comes in, I'm reinventing the wheel. And I said, this is just ridiculous. So I started creating kind of ideal target portfolios, right?
Mm-hmm.
But today still, if you're an individual, you should know if your advisor is discretionary or not. Can they make trades without you? That you should allow them to, I believe. If you're an advisor and you haven't built that kind of business, there is no way you are providing, there's no way you're on top of the game because you can't possibly trade 100 custom accounts with any efficiency whatsoever. You can't possibly do that and talk to each client and have and then customize each portfolio. And if you don't have an investment philosophy, which is the biggest point here, how do you invest money? How do you believe money should be invested for a really conservative person, for a conversive person, for a moderate person, for a moderate growth, and for a growth, and for an aggressive. How do you believe money should be invested? Then it should look the same for those clients. Once you're
similar enough.
Similar.
This is, and this is funny because investors listening, this is now, let's shift for a second. I know we're going to run out of time. This show can keep going. You know, investors, clients, right? We kind of like lie to ourselves, right? We say, well, I want to tinker around with this money and I want to like focus a lot of my attention. And then we ask them, where's most of your money? Oh, it's in my 401k and the target date fund. Right. The target date fund is a discretionary situation, by the way, that's the same thing you just described. Depending on the year that you've picked, you're letting that money, that T. Rowe Price or that whatever Vanguard or BlackRock asset manager at discretion rebalance, right? According to whatever decisions they
and
make.
And decide where the asset classes are going to be exposed.
But you're tricking yourself into thinking that you have control over the other money. So it's like, wait a minute, like which, as an investor or an advisor, pick one, follow it, you know,
You'll be so much more successful when you do, because then you'll avoid making those investment blunders. Then those investment blunders, those one-off mistakes, they destroy your returns long-term. So here's what I want to close on, Alex. Yeah. We got a minute left here, is if you're an advisor and you'd like to just ping pong ideas, we're open, we're share. We're not like, I know when I worked at Merrill and I worked at Smith Barney, it was pretty close. You know, people were pretty closed off about their best ideas and about their thoughts and processes about business. But again, if we are going to adhere to our purpose of to educate, empower, and eliminate toxic advice, we have to be willing to help advisors, and we are. So if you're stuck, you're trying to figure it out, you think the industry is broken, because we think the industry is largely broken and there is a better way, and we believe we're doing it at IDA, we invite you to reach out to us. Let us help you, give you some guidance, share some thoughts. I can tell you about the journey of going from a wirehouse to independent, to having your own RIA, to running it, to building investment philosophies, to trading accounts across thousands of accounts. I can help you with that, and I'd love to. Maybe there's a way you fit into our platform, maybe not, but either way, we can still help you do a better job for your clients and help you eliminate toxic advice and be part of the solution, not part of the problem. So that's our offer to you. Check us out at financialdetox.com. Feel free to give me a call or send an email right to my inbox, jason@financialdetox.com. I'd love to help any of you young advisors out there trying to find your way, and also you senior advisors who are ready for a change and to get back and to refresh your philosophy. So check us out at any time. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Alex. Appreciate it. And financialdetox.com. We'll catch you next week.